A whole township back there, Hank. It's dead empty. It's where our real family come from before. They started trying to clear it out, right before my idiot brother knocked up your... right before you were born. Back in the Tulies, way back along Loop Road. That was Town Road 22 before them Richies bought land on it and gave it a proper name. But they bought way down to other end, not our end, not the old end. Nobody's lived back that way since those fracking people, the gas company or whoever, messed the groundwater all up. I think there was like 11 people left in the township before that anyway. None of ours, just stragglers. Government got everybody out of there with a fat check. And you all wonder why I am the way I am. Uncle Dave used to say curiosity killed the cat. He never smacked me or switched me after I was 8 and I whacked him back with that skillet. We kind of developed an understanding after that. Uncle Dave also used to drink till he blacked out sometimes, and almost always either buy a car, wind up in the drunk tank, sometimes both in that state. So, as he himself always said, consider the source. Me personally, Hank Larson, I believe in what I can catch and what I can learn. Nobody in town likes us. Nobody where I went to school, where I sat at a lunch table with 3 other kids who just sat there because it was the only place they could sit. Anyway, when all Uncle Dave's talk about those fracking people sunk in enough, I headed straight for my home away from home, the town library. Mrs. Ramsey, the librarian, was just thrilled to death that I asked. I have my own clippings about those gas people too, Harold, she said down the end of her bespectacled nose at me, but not mean. Like Mrs. Ramsey got me for the first time since I wasn't in there hunting after what she called King and Koontz and that. What, I'm 16. Mrs. Ramsey made a face but got all the articles real quick. She liked to talk a lot about the fracking, but of course she had a yard of her own work to do like usual and mostly turned me loose. A lot of the historical stuff that the articles talked about was backed up in her big glass case with the key, the one marked Special Collections. Mrs. Ramsey let me at that case as long as I washed my hands and promised to be gentle with the older periodicals, fine with me. I kept coming back day after day and writing things down and mumbling. Miss Ramsey kind of looked at me funny, but not long. She got friendly the way teachers do at school when they see I'm serious about learning something and not just screwing around. Meanwhile, I found out about all about our old home ground. Uncle Dave made more sense than I thought. When they abandoned Albion Township, they abandoned the graveyard too, you see. The one they called Lutheran, though I don't know where Martin Luther ever wrote about pouring fill dirt all over our family plots and mausoleums and going to the trouble of making fake headstones that said other people's names. That was just too weird. I figured it all out from the way the church records didn't make sense versus the newspaper archives that were still on microfilm, then what I could eyeball. I had to eyeball. I smoked a hooter on the way out the first day to try to calm down. It was the last of Uncle Dave's head stash of weed from the big ball jar he thought I hadn't found. I thought it helped. It did at first. I had to eyeball it all. I had to bike out there in this late summer weather that just held and held. With a big old camping backpack full of double-layered hunting clothes and a mess kit. 10-pack of lighters, not much. I had to bike it the whole way the hell out there, and look at the graveyard. All that dirt and stone that people threw up over what part of what Uncle Dave called our birthright. I had to see that fill-in ground and all those fake headstones as a real thing, rather than just 2 different things on paper that didn't add up to snuff. Nothing bothered my campsite. Not that first weekend. Nothing. It was right up in the woods from the boneyard itself at the back end. Mine, just mine. I had a compass and graph paper. I found out what some of those old books said was our family plot, but the names were all wrong. No Larsons, only Henriksons and Earls. There was no way my math was wrong, though. I checked my work too many times, even cheated and did it once with a calculator. No way. On paper, I didn't see the whistling woods and all those empty houses on all those empty roads. All those trailers that weren't even all the way cleared out, sometimes with stereos and furniture and great big bags of meth like ground-up glass sitting on stained counters where the dishes hadn't been done from the night before forever. I started to get scared back up there in that older part of the graveyard where you can see a long way in either direction, the part where the stones are most weather-worn or illegible and there's moss on everything clear back to the fog line and the trees. Those woods were ugly, dark, and deep. Everywhere I turned looked like no way back, losing the sense of why I'd come. The long path of headstones repeated my death. Then something in me just shut up, and I looked. I was still pretty high from that big hooter. Everything was shiny, standing out sharp and clear. I got kind of a second wind, the kind where you feel unafraid, where you see. At the end of the path, facing all those fake Henriksons, there was one little veiny green unmarked tombstone that didn't match the rest of them. The veins in it were all different colors. The census record said there were 6 Henriksons just there. I never heard of any Henrikson anywhere in this whole county, and Uncle Dave knew some old guys, man, old. I saw how the earth dipped around that little stone with no last name on it, in a particular shape that had nothing to do with the way that 6 graves laid out side by side would look. Like the whole upper layer and such had just been laid down like sods over something much more complicated. I could see it. It was just there. There were stairs in that dip, leading down at a gentle angle, then something shaped like a podium in the middle of the plot, like a standing stone, or an altar. Then a couple what looked like little houses, mausoleums maybe. I could see the peaks of each roof under the dirt. I could just see. I put the kickstand down on my back and my... I put the kickstand down on my bike and ditched the backpack right beside it. I went up onto the first plot, to the part that looked like a buried podium near the other part that looked like stairs. The more I looked, the more I wanted to look. At the time, there was no more to it than that, just another hike, just another unexplored part of the woods, just high. Really, really. I was kneeling, looking at all the shiny quartz bits everywhere in the dirt, popping some of them out, the ones closest to the surface. Not that one, not that one, not that one. It wasn't quartz. It was smaller, green, full of different colored veins. It followed my hand. It found my hand. My hand found it back. He was still alive in that cool green stone. There were welters of broken blisters on both my hands from mowing the lawn earlier that day on some other planet called home. They were so fresh there weren't even any scabs yet. The cool green veiny stone touched my hand and it hurt at first. The terror at the middle of everything like raw copper wire through all my bones and veins, but that didn't last. The mineral surface drank from the blisters like it was an animal, licking. There was some blood. I saw the stone was growing warm skin when it absorbed. Warm like a heart or a girl's breast. I heard it beat. It was following my pulse, changing beneath my hand. That was when everything started to hurt a little. I knew it would have to hurt at first, something in me knew, but it would hurt less when I brought the pieces. There were a lot of different pieces I'd have to go whoop on back and bring like a good boy, from a lot of places. I could stand the hurt as long as I went all the places and brought back all the pieces to our family plot here. It would hurt less, too, if I dug. It would hurt less if I helped to get the place looking the way it was in between. Most of the pieces were near to hand, and this place ought to look nice. Like it was. For our family. For our family. I came back the next night with a craftsman shovel. Uncle Dave was out on a toot somewhere. He wouldn't miss it. I dug up the altar stone first, then the little ledge around that, and then those weird stone stairs. Then I started on the roof point shapes back behind all that stuff. The ones I knew even then were going to mean a lot more digging. But as I dug, my blisters began to reverse. The roof points became the first of many, many little stone houses, with my last name in big letters across the front. Larson. Even then, no one showed up to interrupt my work. He wanted more. He was still alive in the stone I now kept close to my skin. He wanted more, and it made me hungry. I had food, like back in Scouts before I got kicked out, MREs and things that wouldn't go bad, but I started to want to feed in the same way that I had to admit the stone was now feeding for me. He didn't care for too many of the double buried that we unearthed and burned, but he was so hungry it was hard to make sense out of most of his directions. We didn't burn all of them. Some of them he wanted. He told me where to rebury them, which particular grave. There was no stone at that grave. He said to make the holes for those kind good and deep. He said they would absorb, infuse. I slept sometimes, but he just talked and talked and talked and talked, and I couldn't keep up with any of it. That work and him were never hard to smell. I started going into town just to get things for him, anything he asked for. After a while, I started figuring out what he meant when he used some foot-long chemical name that sounded too old to even say in a pharmacy. After a while, I learned to substitute for carbolic acid, and that bacon grease might do as well as shortening, end quote, here and there, or whatever weird thing he wanted. Hydrogen peroxide, triple antibiotic ointment, dissolving sutures, then instruments, clamp large, clamp small, number 2 hemostats, all the sewing needles ever there were, a smaller amphibian like a salamander for the eyes, the feather of a crow, a bit of gravel from the road, 3 drops of blood. It would take so many to take, to grow skin from rock backward, and he asked for more. One buried in the woods, a little baby. One still upright, who I had to bring close to there and then leave very fast.
You should not to see.
I saw. And the ones he drew on his own after to the new stone house that no cops still ever come out to see. The new stone house with our last name across the front. I didn't bring all the bodies for him. No matter what they tell you, he started calling in more help. The ridge runners and stump jumpers for miles around. He called them in the water table, in the wind, and they came. They... Oh, I'm sorry, it's time. Kind of sad, really. You told me before that all of this was going to be in a book, some kind of psychological book to teach people like you how to do your job. You can nod, that's okay. Well, it was a nice dream, wasn't it? Maybe it would have helped someone. I hate to say it, hun, but I'm not even really going to touch you. Not even now. I'm not even going to get up. You see the lights flickering, and I'm so sorry. You seem really nice. I hate for this to happen while you're on my ward. I knew it wouldn't be long. He's come to spring me, or his new help have. So much help now. Lights out. Listen. Hear the storm?
It's really creepy ending. Oh, man.
Harlan Ellison did this great episode of The Twilight Zone where this guy is being followed around by these little demons. He's like, what do you want? And the demons are like, write about us, Mr. Ellison. Write about us and we'll go away. And that's true.
Which one is that? What's the name of that one?
Oh, I forget. It was one of the 80s ones. Rockne S. O'Bannon wrote the teleplay, and he got to say Mr. O'Bannon instead of Mr. Ellison, but it was an Ellison story. I can't remember the name
of it.
Yeah,
but wasn't it in the same episode that had Shatterday in it?
Did they do Shatterday on the Twilight Zone?
Yeah. Yeah, they did on the 80s one.
I was about to utter an expletive. I have to look
That's
up.
Not good. I don't know if you can look it up. Our internet's in the Twilight Zone.
No, I'll look it up on my own.
Okay.
I always keep lists of new stuff to watch and new stuff to look up.
So do you have something that...
writers or whatever.
Do you have something that will fit within... we have about 15 to 16 minutes.
Okay, it's literally a coin toss. Would you like to hear the King Kong story or the H.R. Giger story?
Well, actually, before we do that,
okay,
let me... I guess I should promote the reading I'm going to be reading at this coming Sunday.
Yes, do.
That is at the Neon Dream at the Big Logralski, 812 Northeast Cooch, downtown. John Dooley is the feature. Should be good just because John Dooley is going to be the feature. He's really good. But then it's also going to be the second half of it's going to be a bad poetry night. And Josh Baker, Arlo Voorhees, Amy Temple Harper, and I, and some other people are going to read poems that are bad.
A lot of these people have been at my show, Patrick included. I can't endorse this read highly enough.
Okay, so but it's 5 to 7. So it's right. Possible to go from Neon Dream to the Hour of the Stretches.
When you're done there, come up to Ford Food and Drink at Southeast 12th and Division. The read is going to be going for 3 hours. It is loud. It is in your face. We have a lot of spectacular performers, and everybody leaves with their head on sideways. The audience is a performer, too. That's the best part. I include the audience as a performer.
So this upcoming Sunday will be the night that stretches.
Yeah, May the 27th. Stretch it out into 2 reads if possible. If I was not hosting one of them, that's exactly what I would do.
I may very well do that if I can pull it off.
We're going to be streaming video onto YouTube. We have a website up now, thehourthatstretches.org. Also facebook.com/hourthatstretches. That'll pretty much tell you everything you need to know. I post the new events there. It's a public thing. You don't have to be my friend or nothing, although you can friend me and I will send you updates. But again, facebook.com/hourthatstretches. And I am /EdwardMorris.5, I think. Yeah, I'm the 5th for some reason. I get to be the 5th doctor.
Okay. So Edward Morris is my reader tonight. And you have one more piece. that will hopefully fit within less than 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It is later than you think.
Okay. Yeah, I think I want to read the King Kong story. I haven't read that one in a while. This will go quick. This one I wrote when I was just home from the hospital. I was watching King Kong. I'm all gorked out on painkillers, and it made me remember the day I met Ray Harryhausen. It was at my first science fiction convention. And to just look in his eyes, he just looked like this little old man. But if you look further back enough, you see that he actually was Kong. But I wrote this for Mr. Harryhausen, again, when I was just home from the hospital, because I was watching the King Kong on a big screen TV. All those backgrounds, all those painted, elaborate backgrounds, there had to be a story there. This is a story I got out of it. Get off your knees, I'm not your God. For everything there is a place, a time to swing in the branches and play and be glad, and a time to rent, to uproot that tree from the ground and make a club of it and test its swing. A time to smear my face and chest with the blood of my kills, to hide the shine of sweat and mask my stink from the larger predators, to sleep upside down in trees like the great fruit bats who come when it is warm and eat all the worst of the bugs. A time to go out and execute natural law, to do what must be done, to hunt. This is good, the way, mine. But there is peace, too, when the nights get long and late and this big island talks and talks and talks, like Mama would. But in an older tongue, I can still understand when it's just us awake, just me and this island. This island talks deep, deeper than the flow of the slow fingers of the tide that washes up baby turtles and driftwood and stranger things, deeper than the chatterings of the wriggling two-legged rats. Deeper than the chatterings of the wriggling two-legged rats that washed up and nested on my beach some other time ago, even when they pound their hide drums and sing. Deeper than the cries of the lizards, the serpents, the winged and nighted things who sweep down at me sometimes like great troublesome mosquitoes which I must pause and snap in half. This island speaks just as I speak, that clearly. The island and the forest do, the wind and the trees right there for anyone to hear. And the tongues of the ancestors of my ancestors, they sing to me and teach me everything I need to be. Everything that makes it make sense when I listen and hear and let my terror run off and get itself good and lost out there in that thick, dank fog.
You are the last of us,
old Mama croaked in my ear time and again while she was here.
Once, my dear baby boy, our temples were mighty, taller even than you could climb all up and down the long, long coast that used to be there.
A withered claw pointing, gesturing somewhere out in the sea, way past the beach.
The sea took most of our land, our birthright, in times before my mother's grandmother's time, when doom came to us.
Now only this island remains, and atop at the hill of the skull, our people's necropolis I knew as cradle and hunting ground since Mama took me off the tit. Mama, where did you go that last night, Mama? You were the last to go out in the woods. I was too young to understand. So young I tried to follow, to go and find you or any of the others when you all fled. I looked inland. I looked underground. I climbed everything. I dug everywhere. And then I cried and tore at my own flesh because I was still alone. Alone. None of it was like playing hide and seek when I was a youngling. None among them wanted to be found. I would always be hidden now and always seek. That puzzle is too much for me, and I gave up on it long ago. I remain in the temple, only I, just me, as votary, as acolyte, as keeper, as Kong. I remain like this island remains. I squint and peer down the foggy stone canyons into the jungle that grows thicker each season over what were once our streets, our marketplace, our homes. Our home. The jungle eats more of it every warm season, hides more and more of it, and makes more fog that blows up from the lowlands into the hills and the caves and makes more room for all manner of new monsters to bite. They can try. Mother told me many old words and what they used to mean.
Little Kong, your name in the old tongue means priest, guardian. You're a guardian of these lands where we live. Where we live is on a big rock in the sea, a big piece of ground sticking out of the water. It's all one big rock, you see, but the water breaks it up into little rocks that stick out. The biggest rock of all is the whole ball of it, so big it contains even the water.
I looked out and up at the stars outside the mouth of our cave.
Oh.
Mama saw that I comprehended. Yes, yes, my boy, yes, that is the way of it. There are bigger pieces further out from us. We used to be able to walk to them. Perhaps one day you can make a raft.
Mama, what's the name for where we live? A deep breath, and she very nearly sang the word.
It is called Gahanathoa, after he who spared it from the sea.
Who was he, Mama? Who was he? What did he do? Outside and down in the lowlands in fog, some creature cried out, and I nearly hit my head on the cave roof when I startled. Mama smiled, patting the owie while stealthily removing some insect from behind my ear.
Gahanathoa was a god, baby. A true Kong. He bested his father, Cthulhu Illimoku, in a fair fight when Cthulhu Illimoku wanted to destroy everything that was alive.
I remember leaning forward, chin on my fist, listening. I remember the knuckles of that fist going white.
Of all our lands, all our birthright, only this island was not sunken into the sea. Only this temple, only these few of our kind.
I love you, Mama, wherever you went, but I don't want to serve a big, scary god like that. I've never seen him or a flood either. All that was before my time. I serve no god but me. And I don't want to be a god to the new creatures either. I try to tell them. They only understand some of my words. An insult beyond sacrilege, beyond mockery, they have barred our family tomb with a heavy wooden gate. It takes dozens of them to even close. Still, the tombs make me uneasy. I hate looking at those stones because it makes me think, and when I think what I think, the island wind often affirms on my long nights when there is timeless time. I think that maybe my forebears called Gahanathoa's pappy out of the sea, that maybe some of them went mad and took after their own kind and made blood sacrifice, and maybe in so doing they made him madder. But they're not here now. No monsters up in my cave, no gods, nothing that bites, just me. When the darkness gets too quiet, I pray to the wind. The wind answers from the canopy where the huge purple butterflies sip at those same flowers I eat when I need to be sleepy. In their sleep, I dream lands raised from the edge of some other sea, awash in vast bright skeins of light, and a hum no wind could make. That pretty country could only be Gahanathoa, restored elsewhere, shining on a hill. If there were more of us, we could beat the jungle back and the infestation that washed up on our shores to dig up and defecate in our nest. But in those dreams, I see temples taller than I could imagine, the tallest one I begin to climb and climb. The air is rare in those dreams, and heady, so far from home, from everywhere comes that soundless hum for which I long, its strange song. There are clouds, but not like clouds here. Far away at eye level, strange pterodactyls with single burning red eyes dip and flutter and make sounds. I have almost achieved something, almost. No dream ever stays as long as it should. But those dreams are all I have since Mama left. They teach me the most. In them I see everything for the first time again, like a child. In them there is sense, power, triumph, meaning. In them I am truly for the first time a god. Because in them I find beauty.
Huh. Wow.
That was, again, that was in P.S. Publishing's anthology, Through a Mythos Darkly. It's available at pspublishing.com. Take a look. They really love me over in the UK for some reason. I got English blood, and it all seems to gravitate back to weird fiction in that particular that
was,
region.
That was an uplifting Kong story.
Yeah, he's still... It was like the Kong prequel, you know. He was starting out. I had a head full of Grendel by John Gardner, which is one of the greatest freaking books in the English language ever.
I like that one a lot. Like,
what would Kong look like? I try to do that with... most monsters. I think a lot of monsters don't get a fair shake. I tried to write a Joker story once that DC would never touch ever. It was fun, though. It was a post 9/11 Joker story.
Oh, no.
I'm just going to leave.
Oh,
right
no.
There.
So we got about 5 minutes. I just want to say that, again, that there are several readings happening this Sunday at, there's Neon Dream happening from 5 to 7 p.m. With John Dooley as a feature. I was hoping to play a song by John, tonight, but unfortunately the internet refused.
Ducky, my friend Ducky said that the internet was, or that the site was down, the KBOO site was down.
Oh, that was a week ago. It's fine now. They're recording this right now.
Excellent.
It's just the computer in the air room, the internet is not working. I'm sure when I leave the air room, the internet will be working. It's not like a...
I just saw the post. Yeah, you have that like reverse electro-empathy thing like me and my friend Josh do. We make things go haywire when we're upset.
Well, I heard from the board op before that they
issue. It's not just you. That's
no,
good.
It wasn't.
It's a terrible mutant power to have. Terrible.
No, it's very terrible. There was also a bad poetry from Josh Baker, Arlo Voorhees, me, Amy Temple Harper, among others, and that's from 5 to 7 at the Big Lagrowski downtown. And then after that, at 7 to 10 p.m. There's the hour that stretches at Ford Food and Drink with Dan Raphael, and that's at 12th and Division, Southeast Division. And Dan Raphael, and you're gonna have to remind me of the rest of the readers.
Let me get them back
up. But you are hosting that.
Yes, we have Dan Raphael. We have Anna Suarez, who is an hour discovery and sensation, absolute prodigy from down at PSU way. Lit fic writer bordering on bizarro, guy named Hobie Anthony, real solid pro author, real Portland gem. Lucky to find him. Amy Leona Haven, who is an Israeli-American poet and dance performer involved with Wolford Dance Studios. Nick Gimpetro, our webmaster, who writes real good horror and manga. Josh Napton, who, again, his poetry must be seen to be believed. He writes bizarro horror and bizarro poetry, and I just don't want to give anything away about the performance, but you got to see this. This is a neat thing. This is something I'm real proud to do as an MC. You'll understand when you see it.
And
Dan Raphael as well. We mentioned him.
Yes. And also, just to mention that there is the first Monday of the month is the last stand at Wildwood, which is the former Tony's Tavern reading. It really is Tony's. Well, it didn't go anywhere because it's the same building. It's just the bar got renamed.
Okay.
There's absolutely no difference whatsoever.
So what day of the week is that again?
First Monday of the month.
First Monday.
I can't remember who was featuring this time around, but... But that is happening next month. Walt Curtis will be hosting the second Monday of the month and the third Monday of the month. I'm going to have Mike G and Dennis McBride, who were both regulars at the Tony's Tavern. Last Stand at Wildwood reading.
Who will be hosting Walt?
Walt, not that night. I'm hosting the third Monday of the month with Dennis McBride and Mike G. Walt will be hosting the second Monday of the month. And it is later than you think. You are listening to KBO Portland. This has been Talking Earth. My awesome guest in the studio has been Edward Morris.
Thank you very much again for having me, Patrick. This is a real shot in the arm.
Thanks for coming.
Wonderful thing to get out and do on a Monday.
Thanks for coming in. And
it's so nice out.
Everybody
who's not in Portland, be jealous. It is nice out.
it's very nice out today. Yes,
you wish you were me.
Yes. So stay tuned for Gremlin Time.
We're celebrating KBOO's 50th anniversary on June 3rd at 2 p.m at the Oregon Historical Society's outdoor plaza. Join us for music, fun, special guests, and bring a homemade birthday cake to share and help us celebrate. Bike to the party as part of our Pedal Palooza bike ride. The ride begins at 1 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8. Come ride your bike from our building to former locations of the radio station and end at the celebratory 50th anniversary of the very day we first switched on our transmitter and began broadcasting to and with the communities of Portland. Again, that's our 50th birthday party on Sunday, June 3rd at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the party and our history can be found at 50yearsofkboo.fm.
Happy birthday.
KBOO Community Radio is proud co-sponsor of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, a four-day multidisciplinary event from May 23rd to May 28th in various venues in North and Northeast Portland. The Vanport Mosaic Festival includes exhibits, art performances, a reunion and celebration of former Vanport residents, oral history documentary screenings of Priced Out